60 years of family culture. Join the Robson Civil Projects team for the opportunity of a lifetime. The Isuzu MUX is born to tow. Your rugby league coverage on SEN starts now. Welcome to NRL Crunch Time.
Yes, it is crunch time. Welcome wherever you're listening across the SEN network. I'm Matt White. Welcome to our listeners on SEN 1170 AM in Sydney, SENQ 693 in Queensland, SEN 1620 AM on the Gold Coast, and wherever you're listening via the SEN app and the SEN podcast. We are at the Sydney Cricket Ground today ahead of what will be a very emotional match between the Roosters and the Cowboys. James Magnusson and Anthony Seibold are with me for crunch time. G'day, gents.
G'day, Matty.
Good to see you, Missile. We spent a fair bit of time at the Commonwealth Games together. Good to see you as well, Siebes, here on a glorious day at the SCG. It's a beautiful afternoon for footy.
Yeah, great afternoon for football. I think the Cowboys-Roosters game, both teams are in great form, so hopefully we get a good crowd. I know the Roosters generally don't get too many, but they're expecting about 14,000, so get out here and support your team, and can't wait for the game.
I thought on the way in, Matty, I thought this is a bumper crowd today for the Cowboys-Roosters game. Yeah. The car park was packed, people everywhere.
People everywhere.
And then I realised the City to Surf accreditation tent was set up next door. So they weren't actually Roosters fans, they were running enthusiasts.
Well, that's exactly what I saw. I got through the car park and then I popped out and I saw all these people walking around from the Horden Pavilion, and then I went, I did exactly the same as you, and then I noticed that they had their City to Surf bibs.
Yeah.
And I said, hang on a sec, since when did the City to Surf finish at Moore Park?
Have you ever done the City to Surf?
I haven't. And I had a very good excuse because during the Channel 10 days of coverage, I commentated the City to Surf. So my get out
clause. Is it on
clause,
TV, is it?
Yeah. My get out clause
good
was
excuse, mate.
Had to host and commentate it.
Have you done it, Siebes?
No, never, no. But they do tell me it's a great event. A few of the staff I used to work with at the Rabbitohs did it 1 year, and they tell me the socialising afterwards is outstanding.
The socialising's good. This year they'll be running past my house while away from the balcony. I did it once, and about 7 kilometres in, I realised exactly why I was a swimmer and not a runner. And on the home straight into Bondi, when two guys in full-size bananas and pyjamas outfits overtook me, that was basically the low point of my day.
Yeah. I had the pleasure of commentating with the great Rob DiCostello for a couple of years, which was awesome to get his insights. You could have sat there and talked to him all day. And actually, one of the things we spoke about in our Commonwealth Games coverage, I said to Deke, what's the first thing you look for when you're looking for a runner who's struggling in the fatigue sense? And he said, I look at their head. And if their head's starting to wobble, then that's trouble. And I asked the Missile the very same question when the Kyle Chalmers stuff, Siebes, is going on in the Comm Games. What was the first thing that you look for? And you said you look into their eyes, and you could see that he was struggling emotionally and physically, etc., however he went out and delivered. So it's a really interesting take. When you're looking at a footy player out there who you might need to replace or who's struggling, what do you look for?
Yeah, again, it's body language, but often you're looking for hands on hips, or you actually look, like on a kick chase line, you're actually looking for that head wobble as well. Like you start to have a look at the forwards, the head will wobble on a kick chase line. So, body language is key.
Just on that, on body language. So remember when you were training growing up and the coach would always say, the best way to get in air is stay upright, hands on head or something? I read a study the other day, the best position to take in oxygen when you're really gasping, hands on knees, bent over. So remember the coach would always say, don't bend over.
Yeah.
Stand up, chest high, hands on head, don't bend over. It's a myth. We'll lie to you all along.
We used to get penalties down at Canberra when I played years ago down there if we bent over.
There you go.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
I love busting myths like that.
What was your go-to when you're on pool deck to try and put a bit of fear into the opposition?
So the big one in swimming behind the blocks is a bit of slapping. So you can do a slap where you flick your arms and your bicep hits your lat. So if you could do a couple of big slaps and people look across and, whoa.
Hang on. Go back. You do a slap where your bicep...
Yeah, so if you flick your bicep down, it can slap on your lat and make like a clap sound.
Right.
So you slap the biceps before you race. Blokes are looking along the line at like who they're racing. But the big one in swimming was Michael Phelps used to be able to bend over before he raced, slap his arms behind his back, and they'd almost touch each other behind his back. He's got freakishly long arms. And he'd do this big oof and slap himself on the back. And I'd heard about it, but never raced him before. And I was leading off the relay for Australia in 2011. And I hadn't looked who was leading off for other nations yet. And so I didn't really know who I was racing. They just brought me in for the final. I was leading off for Australia. And they blow the whistle to get up on the blocks, and I hear this, whoo. And I looked across, I was like, holy shit, I'm racing Michael Phelps today. And that was the first time I ever raced him, but that was his thing. So yeah. You knew when you were racing Phelps when you heard that big boof on the blocks.
When he had that body too, like you say, the freakishly long arms and the disgustingly weird torso.
Essentially
no legs.
Yeah.
Perfectly built for swimming.
Yeah.
0457 736 736 is our text line if you'd like to be part of the conversation this afternoon, or you can give us a call. 1300 01 1170 is the open line. Keep your thoughts coming through and we'll get through those as we count down towards kickoff between the Roosters and the Cowboys. So 8th versus 2nd on the ladder, round 22, of course, of the NRL, and it's a picture here at the Sydney Cricket Ground today. However, gentlemen, the biggest talking point, obviously, over the last few days, and it's been incredible to see the reaction to the news that broke of Paul Green's passing, pretty much a month short of turning 50 years of age. So just 49, a father of two, of course, a premiership-winning coach, a man who had coaching and playing links to both of these teams that are going to be out here today, Siebes, the Roosters and the Cowboys. So it's going to be a weird feeling, I think, out here today. I mean, we're at the back end of the season, both of these clubs, especially the Roosters, trying to fight for their position in the top eight. Yet there's going to be a dark cloud hanging over this one.
Yeah, there certainly is. Paul Green played for the Roosters, and in 2013 he was the under-20s coach and also one of Trent Robinson's assistants. So they won the premiership that year. So obviously his legacy is quite strong here. And then obviously being the one and only premiership-winning coach with the North Queensland Cowboys in 2015, as you suggest, both teams are very close to Greeny. And tragic circumstances and such a shock during the week. And having a long history myself with Greeny, having coached against him at every level, having played against him many years ago, just a great deal of sadness I suppose thinking about his family and the hurt you can't imagine how they're feeling. But certainly really sad week.
He was a fiery little number seven. When you go back and start to remember Paul Green as a player, he was an elusive little bloke. I mean, that was back in the days when the jumpers were much bigger than what they are now. So he almost got squallowed up in that number seven jersey. But he was a thinking footballer too, and a thinker away from the game as well. I remember, in early days through Sports Tonight, etc., when Greeny was coming through, that we'd go and do stories on him when he was learning to get his pilot's license. He loved it up in the sky, both in fixed wing and in helicopters as well. So quite a character both on and off the field.
Yeah, he certainly was. He was a super intelligent guy. Not only had he got his helicopter's license, he went over to Harvard and completed a course over there whilst he was coaching the Cowboys. He was forever trying to learn and be curious, and that was something I admired a whole heap about Greeny. He just didn't think that he knew it all. He wanted to continue to grow in that space. And, one of the things that people in Sydney probably don't understand was the influence he had on the Brisbane competition back in the early 90s. And I first came up against Greeny in 1992, and I was only 17 at the time, and I was with the Broncos, and they put me with a team called Brisbane Brothers, and Brisbane East were one of the better sides at the time. And I remember playing A grade at the call at the time, coming off the bench and playing against Greeny, and he was the young halfback who was a bit of a superstar in the competition, Queensland under 19 halfback at the time. Johnny Lang coached that particular team, and he made two grand finals in a row as a halfback with Brisbane East, and he won the Rothmans medal in 1993. So he had a really, I suppose, decorated career as a young player before he came down to Cronulla. And I know talking to him, he thought that was a great stepping stone for him to come through that Brisbane or Queensland Cup, it's called now, pathways as a young player, rather than play against guys his own age. Like, he was actually a young player playing against men, some who have been and played in the Winfield Cup, as it was called in those days.
Yeah.
So I think that sort of set him up to have a really good career when he came down with Johnny Lang in 1994. Because he was outstanding for the Cronulla Sharks. In his second year, as I said, he won the Sydney version of the Rothmans medal.
95.
So outstanding player and probably an even better coach, you'd probably say.
162 first grade games. He played 95 games for the Sharks, 35 for North Queensland, 20 for the Roosters, also games for Parramatta and Brisbane. And as you mentioned, a stellar career before he came down to Sydney. Queensland State of Origin player, Australian representative as well, and premiership winning coach. 167 games coached between 2014 and 2020 at North Queensland. So such an incredible history at the Cowboys. It is James Tedesco's 200th game today here at the SCG. That should be one of the key celebrations. But obviously, a lot of thought will go into remembering Paul Green. There will be a minute silence. I've read during the week that Trent Robinson in particular and obviously Todd Payton have said, we're keeping an eye on our players. We don't know if any players might be affected and might need to sit this one out, but they're going to keep an eye pretty much all the way up until kickoff, which is great to hear. There will be black armbands worn by both of these teams today. And as I mentioned, a minute silence here at the SCG today as the game remembers Paul Green.
Sad news. The rugby league world is in mourning with the sudden death of premiership winning coach Paul Green. The 49-year-old passed away at his Brisbane home this morning, Thursday.
He was my kick and catching coach when I was coming through at the Broncos, and he was also my coach when I was at Wynnum. A small amount to do with him, but in the time that I did, it was actually really interesting. The year that I was at Wynnum, I ended up signing with another club to leave, but we had a really tough start to the season, really tough, lost quite a few games. But Greeny managed to turn the Wynnum Seagulls around. They won the premiership that year, so he's a fighter. It's a very sad day.
Right, but the key thing is that we keep our patience. Strong into goal, bend the line, but play patience. Get them into that grind. This week our theme is what?
Whatever it takes.
So whatever it takes. For the next 40 minutes, whatever it takes, you find the energy, stick to the plan, trust each other and back each other up. All right, let's start well. Start well, boys.
WIT, whatever it takes, a common theme amongst coaches, but when you hear it there being delivered by Paul Green and obviously Cam Smith and Denon Kemp talking about what unfolded on that Thursday, it sort of takes you into the fighting spirit of the bloke, doesn't it? He was a little guy who was always fighting, whether it was out there as a player or as a coach. So in terms of what you saw from him as a coach, Siebes, what do you think the key to Paul Green's success was?
I think he was very innovative. I think He started coaching at Wynnum Manly Seagulls. And when I say about innovative, we all know Jake Granville now is a hooker and he's been an outstanding hooker for the Cowboys. At that time, and I remember what Dan Kemp was talking about, they lost their first four or five games in a row and they went on to win the premiership that year. But one of the changes he made about week six of that season, because I was coaching in Mackay, like for the Mackay team in the same competition, he put Jake Granville, he would play him in defence at fullback because he was great at organising the line, and he would play a dummy half in attack. And because he was super fast out of dummy half, almost like a younger or an early version of Damien Cook. That's the sort of speed that Granville had back in the day. So as I said, like that's quite unusual, isn't it? He'd wear the number one, but he would defend as a fullback, organise the defensive splits, and then play as a nine. So he sort of was out there with his thinking. I think by the time he got to the Cowboys, he had Jonathan Thurston to work with. He certainly changed the way they played. And again, Michael Morgan, he changed his positions a couple of times. He made Jason Tumalala, or gave Jason Tumalala, great confidence to play longer minutes in that middle third of the field. And he had success at every level. That's the thing. He had success as an assistant coach with the Roosters, as a head coach at the Cowboys, and as a Queensland Cup coach with Wynnum Manly. And I think that speaks volumes about his career as a coach.
It is very sad circumstances, obviously, his passing at the age of 49. And it's led to a further conversation that both of you guys will certainly be part of, because you've both experienced this. And I have in some ways to my degree with parts of my career. But it leads to that question of how do people cope when things that they have achieved very highly at, have put their entire life's work into, all of a sudden come to an end. In Paul's case, it's coaching and all of a sudden without a job. In your case, Maggie, it's being a world champion, Olympic representative, and your swimming career comes to an end. Siebes, you've been through the mill as well in terms of coaching as well. So how did you guys deal with that next phase of life and that part there when there is a hole? I mean, there's absolutely a hole, whether it's mental, physical, or both.
Yeah. Oh, look, I think the toughest thing for me was finding an identity after sport. I was known from 11 years old as the swimmer. Kids at school, that's James, he's the swimmer. Into life as a professional swimmer. And then you swim that last race, you hang up the goggles, and you kind of look at yourself and go, who am I now? What gives my life purpose? What drives me? What gets me out of bed in the morning? And that's actually quite a rocky road. And you have days where you lie in bed and go, what am I, you know, now? What am I going to do now? And I think the important thing is that we have these conversations with each other about, you know, at times where I was thinking, am I the only one that feels like I've lost a bit of identity after sport? Do other athletes feel that, or is this a unique thing to me? And then you see things in the media, you read articles, and you realize that everyone struggles with it, and suddenly you go, oh, I'm not alone. That's not a unique thing. But I think as guys, sometimes we really struggle to verbalize that. And you know, I've probably never really sat down and had a long conversation with anyone and said, hey, you know, I'm struggling a little bit after swimming, or I'm struggling a little bit, you know, with my identity. And that's where we've got to be able to take a positive from a really negative situation and say, let's have a conversation with each other about, you know, how we're feeling, and rather than internalizing it.
Do you think that, and obviously this is something that's, you know, that the message has been rammed home loud and clear, that we do need to talk more as a society, especially men, especially Australian men. I mean, if there's a category there that's not going to open their mouths and be open and honest, it's probably the Aussie male would be front and centre. But do you think there's probably something around the sport in particular, like your sport and swimming? Essentially, Maggie, only former swimmers are really going to know what it's like to stop being a swimmer and go searching for that identity. So in Siebes, with your case, do you think that fellow footballers, fellow coaches are the ones who are going to help you first and foremost? Is there something there that sport might need to do a bit more of?
It's really interesting. Within the NRL now, I think every club has 2 to 3welfare officers, and they do a fantastic job. I think the players are very well supported now. I think back in the 90s when I played, we didn't have that support. You know, you got released. It was just on, you know, you find out what's next, whether it's in footy or you have to go and work or study or whatever it is. Now there's so much time on either transitioning from being a senior player into what's next after rugby league, or the support that you get in and around your studies, in and around, I suppose, your mental health and the mental skills you need to perform at the highest level. I think they're catered for as good as it's ever been in rugby league. There is a gap with regards to the coaches. I've got no doubt about that. Mm. There's no formal coaches association.
Really?
There's been. Surprising, you know, Trent Robinson's been a great advocate for it. We've tried to get that coaches association off the ground a number of times. Mel Meninga was a big advocate for it. Neil Henry actually was funded there for a while from the NRL. And I've got to say, to Neil's credit, when I went through what I did at the end there with the Broncos, he reached out to me a number of times just checking in. And it's really interesting. I think there's a bit of a gap there for coaches, because normally when, you know, coaches know you're going to get sacked at some stage or moved on. That's the reality of the job, right? So at some stage, as good as you've been, or your record's been, or whether you've been a good coach, poor coach, or anywhere in between, at some stage you're going to get moved on. And that's challenging, because what happens with the media these days, and we're part of the media here, but what happens is it becomes a story. And it's
churn and burn becomes...
Yeah, and it's quite... And becomes... individually, you think at the time it's bigger than what it is, right?
Yeah.
And I know in my case, you know, it was quite interesting just, you know, having media camped out the front of my house for a few days, you know, some media trying to jump the fence when I hopped in the car after I'd come out of a 14-day stay at home, you know, getting followed in the car. It was quite surreal when I look back on it. But other coaches certainly lent me a hand. You know, like guys like Trent Robinson. Now, this is the sad part about it. I went through my text messages the other day to see when the last time I spoke to Greeny, and I flicked through some of the messages. Paul Green, on the 20th of August, reached out to me and said, "Siebes, you want to catch up for a coffee? We'll talk anything but footy." You know, that says something about Greeny. It gets me a little bit emotional talking about it now.
Yeah.
But that's the type of person he was. And coaches like Paul McGregor, Shane Flanagan, Craig Bellamy, Ivan Cleary, I think just about every coach in the competition reached out to me. And, you know, there is a great collective there, but sometimes you feel quite isolated because you're the one where the churn and burn is, as you spoke about. Mm. You're the one who's in that spotlight or in that firing line on your way out. And it's never really positive about you on the way out, is it? You know what I mean? So it's quite challenging. And then I think, yeah, I think you can feel a little bit isolated, but I had a lot of support, I've got to say, from other coaches and people like Phil Gould and Aaron Molan, which I've spoken about before with social media. But I do think there needs to be some sort of more formal support for coaches, not just in the NRL, but also in, you know, in other sports like the AFL and so on. I think it's something that we can certainly close the gap.
Do you think we're starting to get a little bit of a better picture around the impact that what's said and what's written can have on not just athletes, but anyone in the game? Like you and I were talking, Matty, during the Comm Games. Kyle Chalmers obviously really struggled with some of what was written and said to him on social media. And sometimes people see athletes or coaches as not inhuman, but they're almost like these figures that can't be hurt by what's said or what's written. I mean, Greeny copped a pretty harsh run after Origin last year. Some of the rhetoric around his coaching then, I thought, as a premiership coach, was
it's horrible.
Surprising.
It was horrible.
Yeah, I saw that commentary.
It was horrible.
Yeah. As if like the guy was new to coaching and didn't know what he was talking about. A premiership winner and grand finalist. I think sometimes, look, what's written on social media, you can't get away from it, and you can never censor 20 million Australians and what they write on social media. But sometimes you can censor what's written in the media, which leads to a lot of that social media hysteria. And I just think sometimes maybe we can have a little bit more compassion around the athlete or the coach or the person that's been written about, and have a think about, you know, the impact that's going to have.
I definitely think, to your first point, I definitely think that there is more of that coming back from the athletes, because the athletes are now having their say. So the athletes are calling it out, essentially saying, you know, I mean, up until very recently, if you were the subject of a bad story or a bad headline or whatever, you had to cop it, didn't you, Siebes? I mean, both of you know that. You sort of cop it and you really have no recourse. Whereas now, for instance, Kyle Chalmers, et cetera, throughout everything that was going on and all the headlines, he had his own voice to say that, and he went back out on social media and said, hang on a second, this isn't cool. And I think you're right now, because it has become more of a two-way conversation, and it probably needs to become more of a two-way conversation.
Look, I get it from the journalist perspective, right? Sometimes you've got to write a hard-hitting story, and there's things that sell and there's things that people want to read. But it's so often, and you know, we speak to journalists in our jobs every day, and so often the journalists will pass it off as, well, it's just something that I had to write. You know, the story's there, so I had to write it. And I couldn't go soft on it because it's a big story and you need a reaction. Sometimes it would just be nice to go, you know what, does that need to be written? Do I need to go that extra mile to really put the boot in? Or can I just highlight what's going on without giving a really scathing assessment of a person's character? And that's where I think we can pull the reins back a bit. And it's certainly intensified over the years. I mean, I remember some of the stuff written about me, and I thought, this is like how sometimes zero truth in the whole article. And you go, how can people write that? But now it's almost like commonplace. If there's an article, people and journalists will just absolutely go for it.
Well, I think, you know, one of the positives, I guess, out of having this discussion is exactly that the discussions are now being had more and more.
Definitely.
You know, I was listening to Nick Davis on the way in out here, and his story was absolutely sensational.
I didn't know that. It was fascinating.
And that's the kind of stuff that society needs to hear. It's 23 minutes after midday. This is Crunch Time, brought to you by Isuzu. The Isuzu D-Max is born to tow. You can be part of our show, 0457 736 736, on text, or give us a call, 1300 01 1170. Matt White, James Magnusson and Anthony Seibold at the SCG, ahead of the Roosters and the Cowboys. More after this. Welcome back to Crunch Time. Thanks to Isuzu, Matt White, James Magnusson and Anthony Seibold here at the SCG. We'll be here for the full coverage of the Roosters v Cowboys, 8th versus 2nd on the ladder. So the 43rd meeting of these two teams. They first played in 1995. Now, here's one for you. The Roosters, it was just next door at the SFS. The Roosters won that 34 points to 16. So 1995, Roosters v Cowboys. Can you name the captains that day?
Siebes, this is you.
Yeah. All right, so 95, I'm thinking Brad Fittler or Sean Garlick for the Roosters, and Adrian Vowles for the Cowboys. I'm going to go.
Oof, you're a little bit off.
Am I?
On both counts. I'll give you a clue. There's an Italian connection between both of the captains.
Okay, so Laurie Spina.
Yes.
So, Italian connection for the Roosters.
Laurie Spina was the...
Oh, Craig Salvatore.
There you go. Laurie Spina was the captain for the Cowboys. And, of course, the great Craig Salvatore, captain for the Roosters.
That sounds like it could almost be a Serie A game. Salvatore and Spina and...
Well, it sounds like a law firm. Salvatore and Spina, can I help you? Now, the rich list that's being published in the Daily and Sunday telly, so it'll wrap up tomorrow, naming the top 100 players, and we'll get to the very end tomorrow in the Sunday telly, where they're going through and basically putting salaries straight on the table. I mean, it's a bizarre thing, and another extension to just how weird rugby league is. I mean, I was told long ago when I was doing contracts in the TV world, don't ever tell anyone how much money you get, right? Mm. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
Because it's a no-win either
way. It's not great.
It's
I know
not.
From personal experience.
100% see. So here we are getting the top 100 listed on the paper and they're counting down.
How accurate would this be?
Well, I think from what I was hearing the other day that I think the three or four journos got around and also speaking to player managers, etc. So I reckon
they wouldn't be too far away, I would have thought. Yeah.
So ballpark.
Yeah. Ballpark.
Within 10% or so, say.
Yeah. Any interesting points that have come out so far for you, Soups?
Yeah, there has been. So doing a bit of investigative work, as I do, now that I'm working for SEN. I've got a couple of key points here for you, Matty. So eight players now are on $1 million or more. And that's a significant rise. You know, probably 5, 6, 7 years ago, there's probably two or three players over $1 million.
Who was the first?
Look, I don't know. I'd only be guessing.
Inglis the Souths or Thurston at Cowboys around that era?
But 2014, Cameron Smith had to be close because I know he had a massive deal to go to the Broncos at the time. I was working for the Storm at the time. Now, I don't know how much he got, but... You know, that was a really big decision in his sort of back end of his career.
So that could have changed history.
Yeah, so, maybe Smithy. Maybe Smithy back in 2014. Yeah. But it's interesting that, you know, there's eight now on $1 million or more.
Seven right here at the Roosters at the SCG.
Well, David Campese was rugby's first millionaire when the game was still amateur. So that was
really? would we on average, the NRL players make more than a... Rugby Australia contract plus your super, what are they up to now? Super 14, Super 15 contract? Remember when like Dell and Lottie and Matt Rogers and stuff were going across? Yeah. It was because it was bigger money?
They were rolling out the big money to get them across.
Yeah, I my understanding is not, and that's why you see a lot of Australian qualified players go and play in Europe, particularly in France or Japan, because that is where there's comparable sort of... salaries to what the players are now getting in the NRL. Mm. Like Semi Radradra, for instance, plays for Bristol. Semi, the ex-Parramatta winger, who was an outstanding player, plays for a team called Bristol. And he's a marquee player for them. And my understanding is he's on somewhere around about that £800,000, which is significant.
That's good money.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So that's way more than what the NRL could pay Semi Radradra. Certainly more than what the IOU could pay Semi Radradra. But mostly they earn the big salaries, mate, when they go across to Europe or in... to Japan.
Get back to those in just a sec, but on the text line 0457 736 736 1, why are athletes or coaches disclosing personal information to the media? And secondly, unfortunately, being in the public spotlight, earning 10 times what a normal punter earns, opens you up to criticism, rightly or wrongly, because essentially you are in the entertainment business. Well, just the first part of that, from what I understand, the coaches and players didn't open up the personal information. Yeah,
and they don't want to.
No,
why would they want to?
No. This is a bit of a dig, but you're kind of right about the second point. I mean, you know, you're out there every day in the entertainment business, you're in the public sphere and people are buying tickets to see you. They think that they've got some right towards... I mean, it's great fodder, isn't it? It's interesting to go through.
It is. And look... That's why, you know, the NRL players are so blessed to earn what they do to play a sport that they love, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I know that there's a lot of gratitude within the NRL. But, you know, my understanding, this is something for, you know, that News Limited has done. They are guesstimates, you know, they're not... accurate from what we understand, but they wouldn't be too far away because of the relationships with the player managers and the GMs of football and so on. But a couple of other interesting points, guys. To crack the top 100 this year, players had to be on $500,000 or more. So there's 100 players in the NRL earning that amount.
It's 100 on CEO money.
So that's significant.
Yep.
Dragons and Roosters with 9 players each are the most represented clubs in the Rich 100, followed by the Eels in third place and the Panthers in fourth place. Back rowers, which surprised me. Back rowers have 29 players in the top 100. So back rowers have 29. Front rowers, 26, make up more than half of the list, while halfbacks have 10 and 5/8s have 9.
Wow.
So I thought that was quite surprising. And the oldest in the top 100 is Cody Walker, who's a real favourite of mine. He's 32. And at the Bunnies, obviously, and the youngest is Stephen Crichton at 21.
So wingers. Where do wingers sit?
Not high.
Yeah, not high. Well, that's why Sammy Radford.
Wait, are you surprised by that, Manny?
Well, I am, considering they're the ones scoring all the points at the
moment. That'd be like if they released the pay for swimmers and there'd be no breaststrokers in the lifts.
Yeah. Look, wingers... Look, you can win a competition with having working like wingers or wingers who just do their job.
Yeah.
And that's why I think sometimes clubs like can't keep like a Josh Adokar. Like Melbourne can't keep Josh Adokar because to the Bulldogs, they needed a high-profile type player, didn't they? Mm. But the Storm, they get a George Jennings, who I know is injured now, but they get someone like that who's workman, like does their job and can continue to sort of, I suppose, finish the opportunities presented to him.
Just off the back of our chat regarding Paul Green, and obviously there will be a minute silence today here at the SCG. Martin says, Matt, James, Anthony, what a fantastic discussion you're having. I'm listening intently while walking my dog. Couldn't believe quite a few years ago the survey of the most overrated player in rugby league. The player who was chosen still talks about it. I just thought it was completely off. So going to the... You know, the hard part of the bad headlines that you get throughout your career and how that can have an impact. Jay says, afternoon crunch timers, it's important to find ways to reduce undue pressure on coaches, players and match officials. I saw a video of Ben Cummins describing his mental health struggles after the 6-again call in the 2019 GF. If we learn nothing else from Greeny's passing, it truly is that rugby league is just a game. Thank you for that, Jace. 0457 736 736. And that discussion we were having around the support mechanisms, especially for coaches in the NRL, takes me back to when Nathan Brown and his tenure ended there at the Warriors, and he came out and said, I want to help coaches essentially stay in a job. And as more and more came out about Paul Green's passing, I kept going back to those comments thinking Brownie could identify something there, both on a professional level where they need essentially to try and stay in a job, not be part of that churn and burn story. But perhaps now there's something broader around that.
Oh, there certainly is. I think AFL have got ahead of the game there. In the AFL, the coaches who I still keep in contact with have somebody who's on staff there, almost like, for want of a better word, a coaching mentor. And I know with England Rugby, we have a guy called Neil Craig. Now, Neil, for those NRL supporters, he was with the Adelaide Crows as the head coach for 7 seasons. Before that, he was with Charlie Watts, who was an Olympic cycling coach on the Olympic team. Fantastic career, both in Olympic sports as an AFL head coach. And he's beside Eddie as essentially that critical friend or a coaching mentor for not only Eddie, but also us assistant coach with England Rugby. To be someone who you can lean on when there's, you know, like some tough challenges coming up or you've been sort of hammered in the media, you know, just someone to sort of, I suppose, disclose information to, talk privately to, but, you know, almost like a sounding board. So I think, you know, what Nathan Brown spoke about, that's the type of role. You know, when I said before about more support for coaches, I think that's the type of role that's critical and crucial. And I think the smarter clubs will get to, we'll get to that quicker than later.
0457 736 736 is our text line. Crunch Time is brought to you by Isuzu. The Isuzu MUX is born to tow. We're back after this at the SCG. Welcome back. We are at the Sydney Cricket Ground. Matt White with you alongside James Magnusson and Anthony Seibold. This afternoon's match between the Roosters and the Cowboys. It will be an emotional one. Keep your thoughts coming through. 0457 736 736. Gents, let's talk about the game so far. So we've had two shutouts and one blowout. So we'll get to yours a little bit later. But why don't we get to the shutouts first. The Storm v Panthers on Thursday night, 16-0. It's interesting watching teams at the back end of a season when suspensions and injuries start to take their toll, and certainly that's the case with Penrith.
Yeah, it certainly is. They've had a pretty good run over the last 2.5 years, so it's probably finally catching up to them a little bit. I thought on Thursday evening out at Penrith, the Storm defensively, particularly inside their own 20-metre zone, were outstanding. So at one stage there, I saw the Panthers had 60% possession. And normally when they have that much possession against a team, they're scoring 20, 30 yeah. points. So I just thought the effort from the Storm to keep the Panthers scoreless with how much possession, but also how much field position they had inside the 20-metre zone, which is obviously defending your trial line. I thought it was outstanding from the Storm. To Penrith's credit, particularly after halftime, they kept trying hard. You know, it was a little bit like a few weeks ago against Parramatta. They were behind by a whole heap at halftime after Nathan Cleary sending off, but they kept fighting. So I've got to give them credit. They kept fighting. A little bit clunky, but you've got to give credit to the Storm.
They were a bit wobbly over the last month or so, the Storm. So Craig Bellamy's obviously found the way to right the ship, so to speak. What would you do?
Ish.
Ish. What I'm would you convinced. Do, Siebes, with Cam Munster, position-wise?
Well, when Jerome Hughes comes back, they did it regardless on the weekend. I'd keep him at fullback because he can play on both sides of the field. So he's a threat on both sides of the field. When he plays as a 5'8", he's locked into that left-hand side of the field the way that the Melbourne Storm attack. So it means, he's fantastic down short sides. He's great, two or three passes wide on the left-hand side. But as we've seen the last 2 weeks, he goes on both sides of the field. He gets the dummy half out of yardage, makes metres out of dummy half to build a set for the Storm. He's show and go over the last few weeks out the back of shape. Or, what we talk about from a coaching perspective is he's almost like one hole wider. So instead of going up against three or four defenders, he's going up against two defenders. So he's one hole wider, which gives him a little bit more time and space to work in. And I just thought, he was outstanding. And he has been the last 2 weeks for the Storm.
So you're not sold on the Storm, mate?
Not completely sold. No, I think Penrith were well and truly underdone. I think the most exciting thing for the competition is what has been the top four sides for most of the year are kind of limping into the finals, and that bottom half of the top eight are absolutely flying. You look at Souths and Roosters and Sharks, they're coming into that final series red hot. The Panthers, the Storm, the Eels, the Broncos, who were a top four side at times, are kind of limping into that final series. So it's kind of been turned on its head a bit, and I really think we could get a side win the comp from the bottom half of that.
Which would be
eight.
A first, wouldn't it?
Yeah. This is the year, if ever.
So the Storm have the Broncos, the Roosters and the Eels, and the Panthers have the Bunnies, the Warriors and then the Cowboys to finish off. So that was Melbourne 16-0 over the Panthers. Then over at Mount Smart Stadium, the Warriors turned it on 42 points to 18. Now, regardless of the Warriors standing in the comp at the moment, I just don't want to be the team that has to go there over to Mount Smart Stadium, at the moment, so to speak. They've only played two there, and they're always going to turn it on.
Well, your team, Manly, finished there.
I know.
They're the only other team that has to do it.
That's right.
Yeah, you'll get yours. That was just, I don't know who decided that masterstroke of playing North Queensland in Bundaberg straight into Warriors in New Zealand. But I just watched that first set last night, and Bulldogs' first up contact wasn't there. I think the Warriors rolled through 60 metres with the ball first set. He's kind of got that feeling this could be a long night at the office.
They should. I mean, in terms of travel, I spoke to Max King on my program, and I'm pretty sure it was Tuesday I spoke to him, and we played it on Wednesday, but they just got in that morning. Yeah. So they went from Bundaberg back to Brisbane over to New Zealand. It's not the world's longest trip, but it's enough, and they didn't get in until 3 a.m., but that was 3 a.m., Tuesday morning, and the game's not till Friday. So they probably should have had enough time to adjust.
It's not the worst prep, but it's also not the best prep. And sometimes it just takes being off a little bit. I reckon the only one that benefited from that Bulldogs game in Bundaberg was Big Willie. I saw him all over socials at the Bundaberg Rum Factory during the week. He was with Terry Lamb. Mate, he was on an absolute junket up there, Big Willie.
What about the Rabbitohs last night over the Eels? So the other shutout, 26 points to nil. Mitch Moses might have to play with a semi-broken finger. He might have to come on back.
Yeah, well, it was a real statement from the Rabbitohs. I thought, last week the Warriors were really poor and, up at the Sunshine Coast. And I suppose the Rabbitohs did it easy, 48 points to 10. And I still sort of probably had some question marks about their defence, but I just thought last night they were outstanding on both sides of the ball. Cameron Murray, particularly the last few weeks, he's been sort of the fulcrum of their attack. Like, he's receiving the ball first up, and he's really digging into the line. And what it does for the listeners at home, it means that Cody Walker can stay on the left-hand side. It means Cameron Murray is the ball player on the right-hand side. And last night we saw Dean Hawkins out the back of shape and then Latrell out a little bit further. So essentially you've got three ball players on one side, one on the short side, so they can take any option. And it's just opened up a whole heap more threats for the Rabbitohs. And that's not taking away from, Damien Cook's threat out of dummy half. But I just like the variation in Cameron Murray's game at the moment. Jason Demetriou has done a good job opening up the Rabbitohs. And they're in good form. They're in great form.
Latrell Mitchell starts for all the people out there. And there's a lot of Latrell haters, so put this in your pipe and smoke it. Latrell, 14 runs, 211 run meters, 9 tackle breaks, 3 line breaks, 2 line break assists, and 2 offloads. Like, he's getting in that Hain 09 form. He's getting there.
He is. And we spoke about the top 100 rich list and who's on over $1 million. You'd have to assume that Latrell Mitchell's somewhere there. Like, thinking back to last year's, increase in form, Manly were the same when Tommy Trbojevic came back. Just how different a team Souths are when Latrell plays and Manly are when Tom Trbojevic plays versus when they're not there. You can see it this year clearly. Since Latrell Mitchell's been back, the only game they've lost was in Golden Point, and they had opportunities to win it, but they lost in Golden Point to a Nicho Hynes field goal.
They're
a top four team. So, look, they found a rich vein of form, and as I said, they've got so much in attack. Every time they went down inside the 20-metre zone of the Parramatta Eels, they looked like scoring, and they almost did.
Do you think they can win it?
I think they can win it. I do think they can win it because Latrell Mitchell, if he can keep fit and healthy, and Cameron Murray can keep fit and healthy, if those two guys are there for the Bunnies, they can beat any team on their day.
So we've seen 4 teams in the top 8 in action already so far in round 22. We'll get another 2 teams out here today at the SCG, the Roosters v Cowboys. So that's position 8, the second on the ladder. This is Crunch Time. You can be part of it anytime. 0457 736 736. Don't forget, our full live call of the Roosters and Cowboys will be coming your way on the SEN network this afternoon.
Look, all I can say is, it was a memorable chapter of my sporting career and one that, looking back on now, quite comical. But at the time, certainly not fun. I thought a lot about it. But yeah, Kitty, I was having kittens, literally.
For those who missed it last week, so basically there were 9 athletes who went to Siebes in the Rio Games where Maggie was, went to watch a basketball game with a sticker on their accreditation that kind of shouldn't have been there, really. And the authority, Simon, didn't take kindly to it, did they?
No, not at all. I think the interesting part is 9 of us got caught, but there would have been about 120, I reckon, that got into the game. Yeah. And I still remember to this day, we were upstairs in lockup. We weren't in prison at this stage. We were in basketball lockup. And I remember everyone sending a text to our teammates from differing sports because there was some archers, some rowers, there was a rugby sevens guy. We all sent texts to our teammates and said, get rid of the stickers. And guys said they were swallowing the stickers because they didn't want to get caught as well.
Flush them down the toilet, Donald Trump style. Now, quickly, let's talk some greyhound racing. Goulburn Track is going to get an upgrade as well. So that's great news. That was announced yesterday. And the $1 million chase heats got underway last night.
Yeah, you're right. Just quickly, the Goulburn upgrade is huge for our sport. Basically, a new straight track in Goulburn. We're going to get a new circle track down there as well. And some lights. So there'll be night racing, big safety improvements for both those tracks, and that's what the industry's all about, making it safe for our participants. So wonderful news down in Goulburn, $6 million down there. And you're right, the $1 million chase just keeps on rolling on. We had one earlier in the year. She's the Pearl took that out in about April, I think that was. But here we are for 2.0 of the $1 million chase. And there's a couple of heats at the Gardens in Newcastle tonight, fellas. There were some heats at Gosford, Bulleye, Tamora during the week, and there's still another 14 or 15 venues to host their regional heats and finals over the next month before we all descend on Wenty Park for another $1 million race. So, yeah, as I said, 2 heats of the $1 million chase at the Gardens tonight, and it's just a fantastic concept that just keeps on giving. So, yeah, wonderful stuff for the sport. We're just going from strength to strength.
Awesome. Are your tip for Wentworth Park tonight? What's your best tip for Wenty Park tonight?
Yeah, look, Wenty Park tonight, tricky card. We're going to go race 4, number 8, Zipping Novak. This dog won the Magic Maiden Series at Wenty earlier in the year. His best time, it's probably 4 or 5 lengths quicker than most of the dogs in the field, boys. He's in box 8. That's not terrible for him. He tends to get back. So he just needs a little bit of luck on that first bend. I think he'll be very hard to beat. And I've been giving some stats to the boys throughout the year, Matty. And we've been talking about boxes and where the best box is to bet on. just got this little gem. Box six. It's been 68 starts at Wentworth Park since box six had a winner. So if you're having a bet tonight, box six is either due or it's never, ever going to win again. So there you go.
Nah,
68 starts since box six won. So steer clear, I reckon. I agree with the missile. Have a bet at Wentworth, race four, number eight, Zipping Novak, the best of the night.
All right, I'm going to go against you. I reckon it's time.
Ah.
I reckon it's, something's got to give. Good on you, Simon. Thanks, mate. Enjoy the day.
Have a great day. Michael Schofield signing out.
thedogs.com.au, the home of everything greyhound racing in New South Wales. Don't forget Sydney Roosters versus North Queensland Cowboys coming your way right here on SEN. Tim Manor will join myself and Siebes from 5:30, the Queensland Cup, Northern Pride versus the Tweed Seagulls. Drury Forbes and Ryan Hansen with that call. We're back after this. This is Crunch Time coming to you from the Sydney Cricket Ground today, where the Roosters will play the Cowboys a bit later on this afternoon. Full call right here on the SEN network. Crunch Time is brought to you by Isuzu. The Isuzu MUX is born to tow. Join us. 1300 01 1170 is our open line, or you can send in a text 0457 736 736. Matt White, James Magnusson and Anthony Seibold with you. We've touched on the rich list already, so we'll get the top 50 in terms of who's being paid the most. And one of those names right at the top of the list will be James Tedesco, no question about it. He plays his 200th NRL game today. A man who's in the middle of all the action, touches the ball some. I worked it out. It's an average of 31 times per match that he's got his hands on the ball at times.
He must be so fit.
Which is just incredible. So let's dig a bit deeper into what we're going to expect today between the Roosters and Cowboys. It will be, Siebes, as we've spoken about, a very emotional match for both of these clubs. Paul Green, such a dominant figure in both of the clubs throughout his playing and coaching career as well. So there's a lot of emotion floating around this grand old stadium today. But when it comes down to it, the Roosters have a job to do, and that is to try and stay inside the top eight.
Yeah, it's certainly been in great form the last 3 weeks. The biggest area they've improved is their attack. Since Luke Keary's come back, it's sort of allowed Sam Walker probably to play his natural game, which is a running game. He's got a good short kicking game. One of the things to look out for today is Victor Radley, what he does. We spoke about Cameron Murray and how he's added variation to his game, but also South Sydney's attack. Roosters use Victor Radley in a very similar way. He's a ball player, particularly as they're coming up the field, and often Tedesco will live on his inside, and is an inside ball option. So look to Victor Radley today to play some footy. I think the Crossfield kicks to Suwali and also Daniel Tupu on the left-hand side and right-hand side, both wingers are a kick option. So those Crossfield kicks, trying to isolate Murray Tualangi, Tabuai Fadoa as well for the Cowboys. They're not huge guys, so I think expect some kicks there. And then Tedesco, we spoke about him in his 200th game. He's a weapon on both sides of the ball because he does such a great job defensively for the Roosters, but he's a threat, so expect him out the back of shape as the Roosters get in the good ball.
What about
be a weapon.
Joseph Suwali in particular, 19 years of age. So
talking rich list.
Yeah, here we come. 15 games he's played this season, 13 tries and 2 try assists along the way. I mean, it's scary to think what he can be and what he already is at 19.
The physicality is what stands out for Joseph Suwali. I think the way he carries the ball out of the backfield. I mean, Selwyn Cobbo is probably the only other young winger I can see who plays with a similar physicality. Normally, you find as they sort of get to 21, 22, those types of young players is when they become really physical in how they carry the ball and so on, because he's such a naturally talented player, Joseph Suwali. But yeah, love what he's doing. He's really progressed this season. It's been a breakout year. He was in with the New South Wales Blues side during the year, so he's a real option for Mel Meninga and the Australian side in the World Cup at the end of the year.
And attention to detail is, by all reports, I heard Cam Smith and Denon talking about this, attention to detail for a young kid is something that you would love as a coach. I mean, he's meticulous with his preparation. He's always there on time, etc., etc. He's one of those blokes that likes to put in the hard work before the game starts.
Yeah, I think he's brought some really good habits and routines. He went to King's College, he boarded there, and his last year of school, my understanding is he combined school and his HSC with being a full-time professional rugby league player here at the Roosters. So you need to be organised, you need to manage your time. So talk about attention to detail, that would have been something at the top of his list. So he's a real credit to how the Roosters have brought him on. He did play for South Sydney in the juniors, through their Harold Matthews teams and SG Bull sides, and obviously there was it was a big coup for the Roosters to bring him across from the Bunnies.
How old were you, Missile, when you started to represent it at a very, very high level?
For Australia, 18.
18.
Yeah, so similar age, I guess. But swimming is one of those sports where you kind of got to make it young or it passes you by pretty quickly.
Did it feel like to you that you were an immature 18-year-old, that you were a young kid in a man's sport, or did it just feel normal for you that this is the trajectory that I'm on?
No, I felt my first year, I felt very out of place on the Australian swim team. Main reason being people that you looked up to or idolised were suddenly your teammates, and that's a strange feeling and something that's hard to get used to. But I think what we're seeing from Suwali is he kind of did his apprenticeship last year, played a couple of games, and seems like he feels completely at home now in the NRL. The big question for the Roosters, and when we talk Rich List, is how do you fit Suwali, Tedesco and Manu, what could potentially be over the next 18 months three of the top five fullbacks in the NRL into one side? Mm.
And they're getting Brandon Smith as well.
Brandon Smith comes in to replace Sam Verrills in the number nine jersey. So, yeah, look, it's going to be difficult because Joseph Manu's best position is probably fullback, and he showed that when James Tedesco's out. But James Tedesco is you know, the top-ranked number one in the game. So how they manage those players will be interesting to see, but they're super talented, and they're on show against a really, I suppose, informed Cowboys team today.
Cowboys are currently assembling pretty loosely out there on the what is the cricket pitch, rock hard part of the ground seats, isn't it? Actually, you were here with the English rugby.
We were out there for warm up, and I just saw Tommy Dearden practicing a couple of shots actually, because he's looking into the grandstand there, where the bowler comes from. The English boys did the same. We had some mad cricket fans in our team, and our hooker Jamie George is standing up as if he's facing the first ball from like a Pat Cummins or something. So
that grass in the middle is literally a different.
It's different.
To the naked eye, a different.
Yeah.
Different hue.
It's actually raised a little bit. Like when you're down at ground level, it's marginally raised and it's quite hard. And the boys played over night time when we were here a few weeks ago, and it was very, very slippery underfoot. So look, it should be a little bit less slippery today because it's a daytime game and it's fantastic weather here in Sydney. So it'll be hard. It's a different service. It'll be a little bit unusual, but again, that's the Roosters' home ground advantage.
You'd be blown away, Missile, when you go out there, and I've been out there. I was out there checking out the pitch before the Australia-India test. We had Brad Haddon working with us, so Hads and I went out and having a chat to the ground
sticky
stuff.
Key in it?
Out there. No. Mate, if there's one person that you don't want to upset around a cricket match, is the ground staff curator. And the curator. We were at the Oval in 2005 when Australia ended up losing that series, and we were there working away, and somebody left a bag, one of the cameramen left his bag on the side of the thing there on the side of the ground, and the curator was going around on his little tractor and mowing at the outside, and he was going to go straight over it. He would have gone straight over it because he had the poops that we were on his turf. But it'll blow you away just how much of the fall away that Siebes is talking about is out here at the ground. There is, if you're down on the boundary and you're looking across to the middle of the pitch, there's a distinct rise. It's probably 2 or 3 feet by the time you actually work it out. Yeah, so the middle of the pitch has got a big camber on it. Imagine the middle of your road. So it's not as flat as you'd normally have at a footy ground. There's certainly a bit of an angle from centre and then falls away. This is the first time the North Queensland Cowboys have played at the SCG. They've played next door, but they've never played a game at the Sydney Cricket Ground. Of course, the Roosters have played here some 300 times or something or other. So it's an interesting one to see how they'll get a grip on not just the surface out there, but the fact that we're playing a rectangular game at an oval stadium.
That's what it's going to pick up on, Matty, and that is quite deceiving. So a few years ago, when I was with the Bunnies, we played the Dragons here one time, and the players, like Adam Reynolds, was saying after the game just how hard or deceptively hard it was, because on one edge there is some signage, so you can sort of see the sideline there. On this closest edge to where we are, where the replacements will sit, there's no signage to, show you where the sideline is. And because it's the oval shape, it's quite deceptive, particularly when you're running left to right, if you're running left to right, kick into your right-hand side.
Who are we talking about throughout the Commonwealth Games, Missile, about the backstroker?
Backstrokers.
Because the backstrokers who need to be aligned perfectly, and I'm a very linear person, so I could absolutely go along with this, but need to be aligned perfectly with a straight line.
We did a training camp on the Gold Coast at Bond University before we went across to the Olympics in 2012, and the backstrokers kept running into the lane lane reps really hard at full speed, and they're like, it cuts them up when they go full speed in the lane rep. It's like, what are you doing? Like, well, seriously, you do backstroke for a living. Surely you can do it straight. And they said, see that building over the side there on the university campus? It runs on an angle, so we can see that building in our peripheral, and suddenly we line up with it and go, bam, straight into the lane rope. So it's quite deceptive. outdoor pools, terrible for backstrokers.
Correct, which you would have loved as a freestyler.
Yeah.
If only it was a breaststroker, then you would have even laughed even harder. They're the most picked on swimmers in a swim team,
I've
the breaststrokers.
Heard making breaststroke.
Yeah,
oh, it's
terrible. That's good. That's good.
Love the show, lad, says our texter here. What's the song in the Isuzu ad? It's a banger. Always hear it at stadiums for teams running out, but never found out what it's called. Do you know?
Oh, no. Okay. We'll find out in the break for
well,
you.
I know what it is. So, guitar riff, Led Zeppelin, Kashmir, and it's also in Puff Daddy, Come With Me.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, okay.
You'd know that one.
Yeah.
They used to play it when the State of Origin would be on, when the teams were walking out of Origin.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know the song.
0457 736 736. We were just talking there about Joseph Suaalii, obviously going to be a key player today. On the flip side to that, youth and inexperience, but certainly somebody who's made his mark, Chad Townsend, 31 years of age, more than 200 games, got to be one of the buys of the season. And the way that he has turned these Cowboys around, taken ownership of the team as captain. Obviously, Jason Taumalolo is part of that leadership group, but his performance has been just extraordinary this season.
It's almost been a career best season for Chad Townsend, because you know he's grabbed this team and essentially he's the organizer of the team, and it's allowed Tom Dearden to play his best football. Like, Chad Townsend's the number one kicker. He's the guy who gets him around the park. And like I said, what that does to it takes pressure off Tom. He can stay on the left hand side of the field, look at short side. It's be that second kicking option when the Cowboys require it. But just the way he's organised the team, I've heard Todd Payton talk during the week about the influence that Chad Townsend has had, almost like being a coach on the field. And that's that's what you want as a head coach. You want your halfback, your number seven, almost like what Adam Reynolds is doing at the moment for the Broncos. You want them to be an extension of the coaching staff on the field. And it looks like he's done that. He's had, in my opinion, a career best season.
Chad's spoken about the pre-season that they had up there and just how damn tough it was running up and down the hills, and Todd Payton made a very clear statement there that this is the team that we're going to be. From your experience, can those sort of mission statements, you know, pre-season wise, can they go pear-shaped at times? I mean, if you flog the bejesus out of your players in a pre-season to make them tough, can it sometimes have a burnout effect?
Well, it doesn't always work. I've got to say, when I was coaching Brisbane in 2020 season, I thought the facility we had was too flash, right? So it was like $25 million facility. And I just thought, we need to get back to working hard. So I took him the whole pre-season back across the road to the old facility, and they had to earn their way back to using the really flash facility and using their lockers with their names on it, all that sort of stuff. So we went across there, and we did. We had a really tough, challenging preseason. We actually jumped out of the blocks really well. We won our first two games, but then COVID hit, and we didn't handle that chaos well. The reason for my story is this: that I heard Todd Payton during the week talk about chaos. So in the past, he said they went through what their training session looked like. Now, I don't know whether you've done this with your swimming career, Maggie, but at times he said they said, this is what we're doing in the training session, right? So the players knew what was happening. And he felt as though they were saving themselves, different drills or different segments of training. So he spoke about chaos, and some teams handle chaos better than others. And I look back to that preseason with the Broncos. We couldn't handle the chaos when COVID happened because we were so structured, we were so regimented, I think, looking back on it. Whereas the Cowboys, he said, you have to be at this field at this time, didn't tell them what they were doing. And, you know, he said, okay, we're running two. Up and down the castle here twice. Yeah. No, we're not. We're going a third time. You know, so handling that chaos, and I think that's the improvement you can see, because they're so much more resilient defensively. They're down to only conceding, I think, 14 points per game. Last year they conceded the most points, over 700 points. So I just like the way they've added chaos to it. It's been a tough preseason. There's been, reason behind why they've gone down that route, and it's certainly showing.
Because you can unsettle people, can't you? Some people are creatures of habit, and they want to know what's going on, so you can unsettle, but football is a tough by name, tough by nature, and it's how they deal with that chaos. Did you ever get curveballs thrown at you in training, or were you just up and down, mate?
We did a couple of times. I mean, Sprinters are the princesses of the swimming world. We don't handle adversity that well. They roll us out to swim fast, and then you know, put the Ferrari back in the garage. But we've done a little bit of stuff like that. It was actually when I did the SAS TV show. The thing I found the hardest was whenever you'd start a new task or whenever you'd set out on a mission, for lack of a better word, they'd never give you an end point. So they'd say, you know, they'd wake you up in the middle of the night, you'd put your weighted pack on, and they'd say, start walking. And then at some point they'd say, start running. But there was never, we're going to do this for 3 hours, we're going to do this for 10 kilometers. There was never an end point. And as a swimmer who everything was measured, everything I ever did, I knew exactly how long it was going to take. I knew exactly the exertion I needed to give. And I knew when to empty the tank because I knew... I knew what it, you know, how I had to space out my energy. And then they'd do this, and it would mess with my head because we'd be 2 hours into a pack march, and I'd be going, is this another hour to go, another 10 kilometers to go? I empty the tank now? Do I start? Yeah. I really struggled with it. And I think it was something that as an athlete, I realized, I am one of those creatures of habit that always knew exactly where, when, and what I was doing.
Yeah, it's an incredible way. Just off our texter who wanted to know about that song in the Isuzu ad, I think we've got it, so we can have a little tune on in.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
Remember Origin? Both Origin teams.
Yeah.
Fireworks going. Out you come.
Yeah.
There you go.
It almost gives me a bit of PTSD because this is like through the Queensland 8 in a row era. It's almost like an ominous sound.
10 out of 11.
That's why Siebs can remember it so well. All right, we need to take a break. This is Saturday Crunch Time coming to you from the SCG. Thanks to Isuzu. Welcome back to Crunch Time. Matt White, James Magnuson and Anthony Seibold with you ahead of this afternoon's game between the Roosters and the Cowboys. Obviously, very emotional here today with the passing of Paul Green throughout the week, a prominent figure at both of these clubs. There will be a minute silence before this match and before every match, of course, in round 22. And all players will be wearing black armbands here today. So it will be a very emotional afternoon. Tim Manners is going to join us for the call, but Crunch Time continues. 0457 736 736 as the ground continues to be prepared for this afternoon's clash. It's looking a treat here at the SCG. Be interesting to see what type of crowd they get too, with the Cowboys obviously from out of town, but the form that they've been in, I think they've got some new supporters this year that they probably realised they didn't have. Just on the text line, a question about the GPS/CAS schooling system. Is that the best pathway for the NRL, says our listener? Suwali, Crichton, Murray, Milne, JWH, etc.
No, not necessarily. Those guys have all come through the GPS system. And there's others like Adam Dewey and Lachlan Elias who have come through the CAS system. But it's not necessarily the best pathway. I think the best pathway has proven to be multi-sport opportunities. What we see in the NRL, what we see in the AFL is those athletes or those young people who have been exposed to multiple sports rather than just focus on one sport. Because unlike swimming, rugby league and rugby union and AFL are late specialisation sports because of the physicality and the collision nature of the game. So I would encourage both young boys and girls who want to play in the NRL to play as many sports as possible. And then there's a number of pathways. School football is one. Getting an opportunity to play in your junior leagues and so on is another. And then teams will have a look. But all those players that you mentioned there have been multi-sport athletes, and it's a common trend across our game.
And then what age do you reckon is the tipping point or the turning point?
Generally speaking, what we see is when they're around 17. So, which is when they're, essentially in around grade 12 is what we've seen where they, then need to make a choice. And look at Tom Trbojevic. Tommy Trbojevic, played cricket, but also he was in a Swans Academy, AFL.
Really?
Yeah, he was in a Swans Academy. So imagine him taking some marks here tomorrow.
Yeah, he
would have
been
Franklin,
a gun.
You know? Yeah, but that's what I would suggest.
If you weren't a footy player, what could you have been, you reckon?
Well, I loved cricket. I played in the Queensland cricket sides as a junior all the way through until an emerging Shield squad, and essentially I went to Brisbane and joined the Broncos as a young guy, turning 18, and that's when I sort of gave cricket away. But
batsman or bowler?
I was a bowler, yeah. But I was fortunate to play in Andrew Simon's teams. We played all the way through in our Queensland teams. Other guys like Martin Love and Jimmy Marr era as well. So, it was fantastic. Really enjoyed it.
There's a great story. I'm pretty sure it was Jimmy Marr. Remember when Queensland won their first Sheffield Shield years and years ago, this was, and they won it. They hadn't won, and then they eventually claimed the title. I was up there working at the time, and I'm pretty sure it was Jimmy Marr who went in. They were out for a good couple of days.
City Rowers,
yeah. Exactly. They were out for a good couple of days in their whites, and they stayed in them. Who was the boss at the time of Queensland cricket? Barry Richards. And I'm pretty sure it was Jimmy Marr. And hey, Jimmy, if you're listening, throw a line out there if it wasn't you. But I'm pretty sure that he went into the boss's office and sat there and waited for him to come in. This is a couple of days later, and eventually he came in, and there's Jimmy Marr with his feet up on his desk, in his whites.
I remember them all being out at City Rowers in their whites, in their cricket gear 100%. After they won. Yeah, it was a great celebration.
Does that carry much clout with the ladies at a night
whites?
Spot, cricket whites?
After you've won the Sheffield Shield for the first time in Queensland, I reckon if you're out Brizzy, I'll tell you who the absolute geniuses that was, the RAAF roulettes. So the pilots used to always go out if they were at an event, say Gold Coast Indy, for instance. Right. They would always go out
making sure
that they were in their uniform.
Couldn't quite do that for our swimming and after parties. That would look a little bit strange. Yeah, out at the nightclub in the super suits.
I don't know. There's an image I don't want to have, actually. 0457 736 736. Just back to the discussion that we were having off the very top of the show, and obviously in relation to Paul Green's passing throughout the week and the pressure on coaches, the pressure on sportsmen and women who, essentially find themselves out of a job and looking for what's next. The way to get away from social media, says this caller, is to get off social media. I don't have social media. It may be different for your everyday person like me compared to high-profile people, but we need more and more high-profile people to get off social media. Look, I think you make a really good point about that, and I know from my experience as a father for two young daughters, we used to say that to them as well, get off your phone, get off social media. However, the reality is that that's how a lot of their conversations go and a lot of the communication. Whilst it's easy, and Maggie, I'm sure you can dive in on this, it's easy to say just get off it.
It's
not that easy for those who are different
generations. Correct. Like you socially alienate a young person if you say get off social media completely, because that's how so many people stay in contact, socialize, organize events. They're in group chats, they're on Facebook events, they're sending Snapchats to each other. It's a different generation. And look, I can understand that point of view. And for someone my age now, at 31 years of age, I could probably get off social media and it wouldn't impact my life that much, right? But for a player these days, a current player, it's just not really a realistic thing to suggest. And beyond that, a lot of the contracts that you'll get for sponsors outside of the game, you have obligations through social media. You've got to go to events and post about the sponsor, or, you know, so it'd be nice to live in a world where you could get off social media altogether, but it's not necessarily a realistic outcome.
And I think the good part of what's happening around the world, and you go to, you know, some of the highest profile athletes in the world, Lewis Hamilton, for instance, are using social media to say this is a platform for us not to hate against each other. So whilst the easy fix, like you say, Maggie, is just get off the thing, those that face the reality that that's not a possibility. Essentially, are then using that platform to say, okay, well, let's just think about how we use this social media and what we say about each other and, you know, hashtag don't hate and all that kind of stuff. So at least there is that input coming.
Yeah, social media is just ingrained now. That'd be like saying to a person, you know, don't use emails or, you know, don't have a mobile phone. It's just this day and age, it's not really possible, particularly for our younger athletes.
Yeah, and I think Australia's put some processes in place with regards to protecting people online as well. I think you know, we're one of only two countries to have a e-security commissioner, which looks after the safety of people who use social media platforms. And then recently the Senate has passed some legislation in and around protecting people on those platforms. So look, it's the reality. One thing I see with the players that I've coached in both codes now, as soon as the game finishes, the first thing they do is go to their bag and grab their phone. That's the reality, and I'm sure that's the same in the Olympic sports as well, Maggie. So that's where we're at. But there's some good things happening in the background that you know, the Senate have done with regards to passing legislation, and people like Aaron Mullen that have been great in that space. Mm.
We spoke about through the Commonwealth Games about, you know, the era of going into camp, for instance, at Olympics or a Commonwealth Games, where you were shielded from everything that came on in, is certainly well and truly out the door. So now it's almost a two-way conversation. It used to be, Maggie, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it used to be once the athletes were in there, they were effectively living that bubble until their competition finished.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The Olympic Village was like this impenetrable bubble of, you know, no one had access. No one. It was almost a stuff of folklore, what happened in an Olympic Village. Yeah. It's like this mystical place where no one knew what happened in there, and you couldn't access athletes, and they'd sort of come out to compete and then go away hidden again. Whereas now with social media, you have access to all the athletes that are in the village. You can kind of see what's happening and what's going on. But yeah, it used to be a thing that the start of the swimming week, you'd put your phone away and not really look at anything or read anything until the results were done. But for athletes now, this is probably a bit of a stretch, but I'd say it'd almost be more damaging for their headspace to get off the social media than to be on there reading stuff.
So it's flipped that much.
They're very reliant on it. And they need the positive reinforcement as much as the damaging stuff hurts. And, you know, I know a lot of the swimmers that were across there at the Comm Games just recently were almost posting every second of their day. And it's how they've grown up. It's what they're used to. And to take that away just wouldn't be realistic.
The Roosters are starting to arrive here, so making their way across the ground from their base just next door. So the Roosters heading on out.
We've already seen the Cowboys. Is that the best colourway in the NRL? The red, white, and blue.
The best what?
The best colourway. They're like, I'm looking at their tracksuits and stuff. They're
pretty sharp.
Yeah. Like you could wear that up the street into Paddington and go to the pub in the red, white, and blue tracksuit, and you wouldn't look out of place.
As opposed to your cricket whites. The Cowboys actually they've got very similar. I mean, they don't have the red stripe, but when they were out there before, they wear the blue full-blown tracksuits as
bad.
Well. It was only just the yellow Cowboy logo that you really sort of noticed straight up.
Yeah, it's not bad. What's your favourite tracksuit, Siebes? From playing, coaching, even now if the Great Britain team, like the English rugby team,
do they have good kit?
The English tracksuit is, they call them anthem jackets, so they're white jackets.
What brand?
Umbro.
Okay.
The mighty Umbro brand, yeah, sponsor England rugby. They're pretty good. They're pretty good, the white. It's
Were the Broncos Nike?
Broncos were, what were they, ISC, and now they're with ASICS. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, but they were Nike for a long, long time, so way back from probably around about the year of the Super League.
Yeah.
Broncos went from Puma to Nike, and they were Nike for many years.
Have you got any old Nike kit?
I've probably given it away.
Oh, that'd be worth good coin.
Did you wear the Pommy Jacks, the Pommy tracksuit out?
No, I didn't. No. We had coaches' meetings after our games, mate. We weren't out celebrating.
Well, I know who didn't. Eddie didn't. He was firing up at people.
That's right.
Here he was at the SCG.
Taking pot shots left, right, and centre. All right, we need to take a break. This is Crunch Time. It is brought to you by Isuzu. The D-Max is born to tow. Coming to you from the Sydney Cricket Ground today, ahead of the Roosters and the Cowboys match coming up in about an hour or so's time. So full coverage of that right here on the SEN network. Tim Manor will join us. Maggie, you going to stick around? What are your plans this afternoon? You going to stay and watch a bit of footy?
I might watch a little bit. Yeah. Someone's got to fill the stands here. There's no Roosters.
Well, there's still plenty of time.
They might all be up in Paddington in the bars, aren't they? And they walk down just before game
time. It's going to be packed here tomorrow too, between the Swans and Collingwood. I just noticed Trent Robinson and a couple of the others from the coaching staff just standing out the front of the members' pavilion stand, looking up at the flags, obviously the Australian flag on top of the old clock here, and just trying to get a sense of what the wind's doing, because it is quite windy. So they were in deep discussion about it. There's a strong northwesterly wind, so that wind's essentially coming straight over the top of that members' stand and heading towards the other side, over towards the eastern side of the Bill O'Reilly stand. So
got Tim Bailey on the panel with us here today.
Drips and drops on rooftops and crops. That's right. Predictive precipitation. The little Taswegian who's now currently sunning himself up on the Gold Coast and living his best life, T. Bailey. So if you are defending the Randwick end, you're going to be running straight into a pretty strong headwind, I'd suggest, even though it doesn't feel like it, I guess, down on ground level that much. But some of those towering bombs could be affected by the wind. So that's just one thing for us to keep an eye on. Pretty sunny conditions out here today. No sign of rain at the moment. A few clouds just hovering about, but the ground looks in absolutely perfect shape. Now, there's news just released by the NRL that the Telstra Women's Premiership will now launch the brand new Allianz Stadium next door. So the first game on Friday, September the 2nd, will be the Sydney Roosters and St George Illawarra Dragons, which is the rematch of the 2021 Grand Final, played as a doubleheader with the Roosters v Souths Round 25 match. So the very first game of footy to be played at the new stadium next door will be the NRLW Roosters v Dragons. That's a great outcome.
That's pretty special for the women's competition to get on there first. Just coming past there before in the car looks outstanding. And, it's going to be a real credit to Sydney to have such a facility like that.
Just on the text line, Jace says, G'day, lads. Thanks for having such an important discussion this afternoon. I'll add that the unscheduled break by Australian captains Meg Lanning and Michael Hooper is also a great example for their teammates. Don't suffer in silence. Yeah, well said, Jace. Absolutely. Another one from... what's this one? The pocket... In the Major League Baseball this week, Rodolfo Castro's phone fell out of his pocket as he slid into second base mid-game.
You're kidding me.
Now, there's a giveaway.
Wow. Yeah, there we go. The Maestro's confirmed.
The Maestro's
producer.
That has been confirmed. So talking about taking that to a brand new level. Let's look ahead for what else is going to happen around 22.
We haven't got our tips for this game.
We have. Well, we've sort of dug into this game. Okay, let's do our tips as we gear up for this one. Thanks to Dometic. Go on your next adventure, Dometic.com. Okay, Roosters v Cowboys.
Yeah, I'm going to say Roosters, which is an upset, really, where they stand on the table, eighth versus second. But just the last 3 weeks, they've found some form. The physicality was the thing that impressed me last weekend. So I'm going to go Roosters in a really close game.
Roosters. Yeah, no real reasoning for this one. I just thought the Bulldogs almost got on top of the Cowboys at stages last week. And I think the Roosters are finishing with a wet sail.
I'm tending to lean with you, but I'm going to lean the other way. Yeah. So I think the Cowboys, their form's been extraordinary this season, and the way they've been playing. The big question mark to me will be just how much the events of the past few days do play on them emotionally, obviously, and that goes for both of these sides, obviously. So, but I do like the fact that Reuben Cotter's come back in to the starting side for the Cowboys. What he offers to that team.
Oh, he destroyed the Bulldogs last weekend.
Yeah.
His leg speed in the middle.
Absolutely. So I'm going to lean towards the Cowboys, but I'm thinking that it is going to be a tight one. As I said, we've had two shutouts and one blowout so far for the three games in round 22. I think this one's going to be a very, very tight one. Let's hope it's a very good game. Jordan McLean is back on the Cowboys bench. Kyle Felt remains sidelined with his own hamstring issue. And Sam Verrills has been named and is set to play at hooker. Egan Butcher comes back after a one-game ban, so Ben Thomas is replaced on the bench. So we'll keep our eyes on any changes that come through from the Roosters v Cowboys. The Tigers have the Sharks up at Scully Park at Tamworth this afternoon. So what are we thinking about this one? I mean, the Sharks talk about a team that is showing great form at the right time of the season. Sharks v Tigers?
Yeah, I think the Sharks will be too tough for the Tigers. It's great to see the people of Tamworth rewarded with the game. So hopefully, I know when they last had the game, I think it was in 2019 before COVID hit, they come out in droves there. So hopefully the region gets behind the game. I'm sure they will. But I think they'll be there to see a real quality top four Sharks team perform well against the Tigers.
Luke Garner was named as the 18th man, but Noddy has confirmed that he will be back in the side. Joe Offa-Hengari returns to lock, and Sifa Talakai has been ruled out for the Sharks with that shoulder injury, so Matt Ikuvalu will come into the centres. Broncos v Knights, Suncorp Stadium tonight.
Bloodbath. Broncos.
Yeah, wow. I agree. I can't see the Knights being able to stop the Broncos from scoring points, so yeah, Broncos there.
All right. Did you both go the Sharks?
Oh, yeah, Sharks, yeah. If that's a dry track in Tamworth, they could run up a score there as well, I reckon.
So Sharks to beat the Tigers there, and both going the Broncos to beat the Knights, and I find it very hard to disagree with both of you on all fronts. Make your next adventure effortless with the Dometic Go collection. Just pack, stack, and go. We're back after this.
Follow Crunch Time on Dabble. Go on, have a dabble. Gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858.
Well, I tell you what, a lot of near misses for the Crunch Time team last week. 5-1 leg misses, stats, but they did hit with the Manly Eels game at $6 same going multi. So they're still thereabouts, which is good to see.
Yeah, they're travelling on okay, aren't they, Joshy? I'll tell you what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to start following some other people on Dabble.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the profiles. So, I mean, you're the expert. So I've always been following Gorilla Bets. He's been really good. He or she, I should say.
That's right.
Who are some of the others I should be following?
Well, Undertaker Matt, if you're looking at some of the rugby league, he's been on fire. He's had 26 copies for his Storm Titans multi last week. Trackside Tips is another good one if you like your horses. But he also is a big fan of the rugby league. A $5 same game multi. That was on Thursday night and had 30 copies. So that means that 30 dabblers have had a win. But of course, some of the popular ones, like you said, Gorilla Bet. I think he was on fire the other day. He hit like 3 trifectas in a night. And I think over 1,000 people had copied that bet. So we took a bit of a loss there, but you know, it's what it's all about here at Dabble.
Yeah, well, he's got inside knowledge, I think. What about Crunch Time? what have they got this week?
That's right, let's have a look. So we're going the North Queensland Cowboys to get up over the Roosters, Cronulla Sharks to win by over 6.5, and the Broncos to win by 13 or more points. That's saying 5-19. Obviously, the Cowboys, the outsiders there. What do you reckon of that?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. The hardest one there is the Cowboys and the Roosters game. The Roosters going in favourites, even though that the Cowboys are sitting second. I think everyone's anticipating the Roosters are going to make a late run. The back part of the season, I should say, and the Cowboys in Sydney haven't been that great. So that's going to be an interesting one to see how that plays out. I've basically focused on one game, and that's the Sunday game, the Gold Coast Titans versus Manly Seagulls. I've gone Manly to win by 7+, and I've looked at the right side defence of the Titans, which has leaked a lot of points in recent weeks. So the right side defence means the left side attack for Manly. So I'm going to say their back rower, Andrew Davey, score any time. Christian Tuipulotu to score any time as well, with Manly winning by 7+. So that's
what I like that. I like it. And of course, you can follow those tips very easily. The other cool thing that we're doing as well is we're starting to go live on the app. This morning we had a bit of a MasterChef contestant on doing his Master Best as well. So you can follow that live on the app as we do that every Saturday now, which is great. And of course, that's we're still trying to tee you up, but we know how busy you're schedule is. But of course, if you want to copy those bets, all you have to do is download the Dabble app and follow the Crunch Time NRL team. Follow Stats13 and you can copy those bets with one click. I should say as well, the Premier League back, I know your son's a big fan of Liverpool, but we had a couple of people hit there last week. Andy, are you gonna have a go at that as well?
Yeah, I will. I'll jump on Liverpool pretty heavy this year because he's confident they'll win the cup. I mean, they had a draw last week against the new team to the EPL. So, but I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, as long as Man United's losing, I think everyone's happy. So, of course, go on, have a dabble socially and gamble responsibly, Stats.
Enjoying Crunch Time Banter? Check out Dabble Banter channels and copy Crunch Time Bets. Go on, have a dabble. Gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858.
Brought to you by Isuzu. The Isuzu D-Max is born to tow. We are here at the Sydney Cricket Ground, just about to wrap up crunch time before we head into full-blown coverage on NRL Nation and around the SEN network of the Roosters and North Queensland Cowboys. Missile, I was going to ask you a very pertinent question about rugby league and who would end up at the minor premiership, but you've now got yourself a meat pie here, and we're thinking it might be one of the new fandangly Justin Hems meat pies out here at the SCG.
Yeah, this is a Merivale meat pie, so I'll have to give you some feedback on what right. Merivale catering's like. Is there a better smell in life than a fresh meat pie hot out of the oven?
Now that you've taken it out of
Jesus,
the wrapper,
it's a good smell, isn't it? Oh man,
yeah. What the hell was I thinking? Bringing another salad today? Actually, just just quickly, if the Cowboys do win today, it's interesting. They'll go to 34 points, only put some 4 points away from the Panthers. At one stage, not too long ago, the Panthers could have been 10 points or more clear than second place, but now starting to catch up. Have you got a read on the minor premiership before we bail out?
Oh, I think the Panthers still. Interestingly, Penrith play Cowboys away for the round 25 game. So that could be right. Really crucial. Yeah.
What about you, Megan?
Yeah, Panthers, but they're limping into the finals with no Cleary or Luai.
All right. Well, we'll wait and see what happens here this afternoon. Missile, you enjoy the pie. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Oh, I will. Thanks,
Steve,
Maddie.
Stick around. You're going to be part of our call, obviously, with Timmy Manor joining us very, very soon. So Roosters v Cowboys coming up from the SCG from 5:30. It's the Queensland Cup, Northern Pride versus Tweed Seagulls. And don't forget crunch time now on Sunday as well. From tomorrow at 1, the Professor and Barney. We're back after this with more.